I'm Paul Landcor with podtech.net, and I'm here with Neil Hand. He's the Director of Vertical Solutions Marketing at Cadence. Neil, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to start off by talking to you about, this is the low power podcast, and the first thing I want to ask you is why low power has become such a hot topic in the design community.
Well, there's a lot of reasons. You know, the first and most obvious one is, you know, the increase in the use of mobile devices and the desire of people to put more functionality in those devices, as well as having longer battery lives and so forth. But there's a lot of other factors at play as well. Even for the non-battery powered devices, as we put more functionality in and we're increasing the power density, it's getting more and more difficult to build these devices within the specs that are required by the customer so that they can be cooled correctly and that the system can function correctly. And so this is driving it as well. And this is being made even worse as we go to smaller process geometries. As we go to the process geometries of 90 nanometers and below, and especially at 65 nanometers, what's happening in the chips is our leakage current and the clocking are becoming the dominant power users in the designs. And so what we need to do is start more actively managing the power in these devices. Otherwise, we're not even going to be able to manufacture or run the devices. And so the traditional approaches that people have used just to add on some power optimizations in the late stage of the design flow are really no longer working. We have to build in power right from the get-go as part of the design process so we can make sure the designs both meet the requirements of the end product, but also can be manufactured and manufactured within the constraints of the system that are being designed.
So it sounds like those are the forces in the market that are driving low power design. And it sounds also like it's pushing it up against the limits of the ability to design such low power devices. So when considering low power, what kind of an impact does it have on design?
Well, it really touches your every part of the design process if it's done properly. You know, when we think of low power, what you really want to do is think of low power not just as how am I going to use a low power process, you know, from the vendor or so on. We really want to think of low power right from the architectural design of the chip all the way down to our vendor selection and implementation. And we need to consider it because if we don't consider it throughout the whole process, if we miss it just in one part of our design or verification activities, all of a sudden, all of the good that we may have done at another part of the design process is going to be undone. So we need to make sure that we take it into account through every stage of the design process.
So I imagine that creates some significant challenges for the design team.
It does. So, you know, typically the design team is worrying about meeting timing, worrying about meeting area constraints, getting timing and signal integrity and closure. Now we're adding into that all of these power constraints. Is the device going to have the correct power utilization? Is our leakage current being managed? Is there going to be any hot spots on the device itself? And so what we need to do is be able to trade off all of these different constraints against each other, the area, the power, and the timing. And the other challenge that we face is that there's no common way, or there has not been in the past, a common way of capturing the power intent for a device for being used in the design process. So if in the early stages of the architecture you decide on a particular power implementation for the device, there's no way to capture that and follow it through the design process. So what this means is it becomes very hard to manage power as the design evolves. And the other challenge is that as we go through this, the RTL is no longer really the golden model because there's no way to capture this power intent of the design. We start using ad hoc techniques and having to put additional information into the RTL code. So where traditionally the RTL that is created by our designers is the golden model for verification and for implementation, that's no longer the case. And there may be multiple models of the design, and what you implement and what you verify may no longer be the same thing.
So given everything you've outlined here, it's amazing that anyone would be able to make a low power chip at all. How are people managing to do so?
Well, it's a mix of different methods. A lot of them there's ad hoc techniques that people are implying. So scripts that they're using to convert data between different tools, manual insertion of capabilities into the design, scripts to automate that process. There's also a lot of luck and a lot of hard work. You know, there's a lot of hard work by the design teams. And the problem with all of this is it becomes very error prone. If you're working with modifying your simulation models in order to simulate some of the effects of the low power. If you're using these complex scripts and complex tool interactions, there's going to be errors. And you're not going to know where those errors are. And the errors are going to show up when you actually get a chip. And the chip is in the lab and it either fails or it doesn't meet your power specs, and it becomes a major problem for the design teams because they're not going to know this until after silicon is produced.
So what's Cadence doing to move from an ad hoc approach like this to employing this holistic approach?
Yeah, so it's what we're trying to do, or what we are doing, is as you mentioned, taking a holistic approach to the problem. Look at the full design challenges from architecture design through implementation, through verification, and saying, how do we have a way of capturing the power intent for the design and using that knowledge throughout the design, throughout the whole process? So having tools that work off this knowledge, having a way of capturing that knowledge. And so key to that is a power format that you may have heard of, or the listeners may have heard of, which is the common power format, CPF. So CPF is a way of capturing the power intent of the design, and then all of the tools in the tool chain can then work off this common power format to make sure that that, together with the design description in the form of RTL code, you have a complete capture of both the design and the power intent. All the tools are seeing the same design. It's being optimized according to the power requirements. It's being implemented according to the power requirements. And also, any of the logic that gets added to the design, or any of the structures that are added to the design as part of the power process, is also being verified to make sure that what we're building is what we intended to build. And so, long before we get to silicon, we can identify problems, can address them, but also, more importantly, heavily automate the whole process. So this significantly reduces the risk of adopting low power in the design.
What role do standards play in this process?
So standards are an important thing within the EDA world. Standards allow interaction between multiple people in the industry. They enable the development and the evolution of methodologies. And so part of the evolution of CPF has been, CPF was created through the Power Forward Initiative, which is a coalition of 22 different companies, both end users as well as industry EDA partners, that work together on real life design projects through multiple revisions of the standards, lots of feedback to develop the common power format. And this is a format that's being used in production today. And what we've done is we've taken this common power format and a parser for the format, and it's been donated to SI2's Low Power Coalition. And SI2 have now approved the version 1.0 of the CPF format. In January, they approved this as a standard. And after, I believe it's a 60-day waiting period, it will be released to all the members as a standard that can be used. And we're going to continue to work with SI2 to, work with them to ensure that it becomes a single standardized power format that everyone can work towards.
Can you give us some more specifics, some examples of the technology that's gone into creating the Cadence low power solution?
Yeah, so there's a lot of cool technology that I could talk about, far more than we can talk about in the time we've got here today. Yeah, so CPF is interesting because it's an enabler to all the technology. But if all you've got is a file format, it's not going to be that interesting. Where it gets really interesting is a lot of the cool technology that's gone into the tools to enable a full low power flow. And if we take a few examples in verification, what we've been able to do in verification is create, both in simulation and using formal techniques, a way of verifying the power intent of the design. So simulation, for instance, if we put power shutoff into our design, where power shutoff is a technique where we can shut down part of the circuit to reduce the leakage current. Typically, this is done as a process as we're doing our implementation of our chip, and it's very hard to verify it. So what we've done is in the simulation environment can use the knowledge that's in our CPF file, and it can make the simulator behave as if the parts of the circuit are being powered up and powered down. So what this means, if part of the circuit is being powered down, we will make sure that any logic that is reading from that circuit is going to have X's put into it, or unknown logic values driven into it. If you are driving logic into a powered down portion values into a powered down portion of the circuit, we're going to make sure that that portion of the circuit isn't going to be working, isn't going to be accepting those values. If you've implemented state retention, we're going to simulate the correct behavior of that state retention. All this is done using the standard verification environment, the standard design models, but bringing in the CPF, which is the power intent of the design, and automating that whole process. We also have the ability of using formal techniques, whether it's the incisive formal verifier, where we'll be able to use formal techniques to make sure that assertions relating to the behavior of our low power structures in the design are working correctly, or conformal low power, where we can automate the process of making sure that the correct type of low power structures have been added into the design. Are level shifters in the right place between our domains? Are we getting the correct sequencing for power up and power down of power shutoff sections of the circuit? So it's really exciting because we can now take our existing environments, and just by adding in the common power format with all this technology that we've added into the verification tools, automate this whole process. If we look at some of the other tools in the flow, like synthesis. In synthesis, what we're able to do is do a lot of optimizations to ensure that we're getting the best power in the final device that we can get. And power is being taken into account together with our timing and area. We're doing trade-offs against multiple timing, multiple constraints. And so some examples of that is the way we can support your optimized clocking structures. So by using multi-level clock gating, where we're going to go in and we're going to say, well, we've got different parts of the circuit that are being gated off different structures. Can we combine those together and move what we call decloning, where we're going to take clock gates and move them up through the clocking tree so we can shut down larger portions of the circuit? We can propagate those clocking equations further up the clock tree by doing what we call multi-level clocking, where we're going to find common terms and split the trees based off those common terms. So the maximum amount of logic in the circuit can be shut down. The clocking trees themselves can be shut down because, as I mentioned earlier, the clock trees and the leakage current are some of the major users of, or are the dominant user of power in the circuit. What we've also added is to support some of the more advanced low power techniques, such as something that's called dynamic frequency and voltage scaling, where a circuit can adapt both its clock frequency and its operating voltage depending on the demands that are being placed on it by the system itself. This proposes new challenges because you no longer have a single operating voltage or a single operating frequency, you have many of them. And so what we're able to do in the synthesis realm is actually take those and do multi-mode optimization. We can simultaneously optimize the design that we're producing based off what are the many modes that this circuit can operate in. Again, trading off our power requirements with our area requirements and our timing requirements. So that's some examples for synthesis. But across the whole flow, there's even more things. If you look at test, designed for test, one of the challenges people have when they're doing testing is as these devices get more and more power dense, it can become a problem to test them. If you power up all of your domains simultaneously on a tester and start testing it, you can actually have more power going into the circuit than can be allowed, and the circuit may fail on the tester, or you may even destroy the device on the tester. And so by using power-aware tests, what we can do is we can go in and we can say, well, using the knowledge of what our power domains are, make sure that as we're testing, we are activating the correct power domains at the correct times, we're optimizing the test patterns that we're producing to make sure that they have the lowest possible power consumption for those test patterns. So that's a very cool technology that's going to change the way people do tests today. We've got lots of cool technology in SoC Encounter and the Encounter suite of tools where, whether it's automated insertion of the level shifters, whether it's automatic creation of the appropriate power domains, lots of stuff there. But one thing that I really like, and it's very popular amongst the customers that have seen it as well, one of the challenges that you face as you build more and more complexity into the power domains of the design is you start building the power grids onto the chip. And the question becomes, how do I even know that my power grid that I've created for the chip is even going to work? I've got multi-stage switches that are going to start, turning on the power into my circuit, lots of different power domains, things going up and down all over the place. How do I know this is going to work? And so we have a lot of cool technology based around power grid sign-off. where we can do transient power analysis. So we can look at how the device is powering up, how our different domains that are defined in the CPIRF file are being switched on and switched off, and making sure that our power grids are going to work as we expected, and do all of the voltage drop analysis across the whole chip and make sure everything remains within spec. And this is in addition to the some of the traditional approaches of the static and dynamic analysis of the power in the design, looking at both static, purely how is my design structures, but as well as dynamic power analysis, where we're going to take some switching activity from simulations and feed those back in. And so that's just some examples of the cool technology, because if all you've got is a standard power format, that's a good start, but you really want a lot of technology that can work off that to help the people get the job done. And that's what we've spent a lot of time doing, is putting together not just this standard format, but the tools and the technology that are needed to make these chips.
Well, that's great. And as you said, this is just an overview. There is a lot of technology here that we could continue to talk about, but perhaps the best thing to do is to tell people just to check in at the website.
Yeah. As you mentioned, there's a lot of technology. People want to find out more, they can go to the cadence.com website and look at the low power section there. But what's really exciting to me with this whole area of low power is that by combining automation with technology, with standardized formats, we can introduce low power to a whole range of applications that haven't been looked at before. And so make it possible for devices that can benefit from low power to adopt it without any of the risk. So just this is just really cool. People should go to the website, find out lots more information, because I think this is just going to be a great set of technologies for people to want to work with.
Well, your excitement about it clearly comes through, and I appreciate you taking the time out to talk to us today.
Thank you very much.
Neil Hand is the Director of Vertical Solutions Marketing for Cadence.